Welcome to the Dog Trainers Podcast,
a podcast created by dog trainers for dog trainers or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back, and thank you so much for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast. Mariano Alvarez here with Brent Labrada, and we're back with Season 3, Episode 6, Building Authentic Authority. Now, what we want to do is we want to discuss, what does building authority mean in dog training, and what does it look like? What are some common problems that people struggle with, and some solutions that Brent and I have worked on over the years that have helped us overcome some of these problems? That and a bit more. We're excited to have you guys back, and with that, over to you, man.
What's up, guys? Yeah, today's episode is talking about the development of authority and what is authentic authority and what does that mean? I think first let's start with the dictionary definition of what authority means, right? So if you guys Google search authority, it means the power or right to give order, make decisions, and enforce obedience. Now check this out. I really like this part of this definition, is to give order, not to give orders, but to give order. Like, it is your job to put things in order, right? Take charge of the environment. A steward of the environment, right? Take care of it, right? Make decisions and enforce those obedience, right? So I really like this definition because a lot of times, colloquially, sometimes people have this like misinterpretation of what authority means. They think it means to be mean. They think it means to be rude. They think it means to be aggressive. They think it means to be all of these things that no one really likes to be on a regular basis, especially towards their sweet dogs. And so in this episode, we're going to really try and break down to the listener, what are the simple ways that an individual can create authority in the relationship with their dog? We're also going to talk about how do we develop authority with dogs, but also to certain dog trainers out there, how do you help develop authority with your clients so that you can help develop authority with their dogs or teach them how to develop authority? So let's get into it, okay? Simply put, I always tell people this like anecdote from my childhood, right? My parents didn't develop authority by grounding me when I got an F in school. Right. Or they didn't develop authority when I punched my brother. Right. That's not when parents develop authority. Authority is typically developed by asking the learner to do really simple tasks and holding them accountable and enforcing those very simple tasks. For example, Brent, go put your PJs on. Oh, Mom, I don't want to put my PJs on. Brent, go put your PJs on. Now, it doesn't matter if I fuss or fought or cried. Guess what would happen within the next 5 minutes? I would have my PJs on, right? And they don't have to be mean. They don't have to yell at me. They don't have to hit me. I might have an emotional reaction, but within 5 minutes, I would have my PJs on. And then eventually, the next day would be the same routine. Brent, go put your PJs on. It's your bedtime. Okay, fine. And then the next day got faster and faster until it just became an understanding. At 8:30, Brent has to put his PJs on. Same thing with brushing my teeth. Same thing with eating my vegetables. Same thing with saying please and thank you. Same thing with, you know, other expectations. Like when I got older, my dad made sure that I opened doors for people. And I would actually get in trouble for not opening doors for people, right? So the basic process of developing authority is really simple. Your job is to create objectives and understandings with the learner, in this situation, your dog. Those objectives and understandings might have certain parameters, and your job is just to enforce those parameters as the individual continues to grow up, right? Now, a lot of people, they make this mistake when they have puppies, for example. They'll call a trainer, they'll have a puppy trainer, they'll work on things until the puppy's 6 months. They think they're done training the puppy, and so they stop auditing their dog's obedience or how well they listen. They think, great, I've done two consecutive months of training. Now I no longer have to do any more training. And they think that everything that dog learned is now installed in the dog's brain. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about what are some of these objectives and understandings we need to develop and enforce as our dogs are developing.
Let's kind of roll through a lot of the traditional ones. There's routine, right? Lots of dog trainers really focus on the benefits of a crate schedule, a food schedule, a potty schedule. Mm-hmm. And then you can take that further and say, you know, I'm going to have a routine for when my dog has access to toys, like two-player toys, meaning I'm going to play with them, as well as one-player toys, where the dog will go and entertain themselves with like a Kong or a Wobbler or something like that, right? Developing a routine for a dog is helpful for a bunch of reasons, but, you know, in the lens of establishing authority, it's a great way to, by proxy, mitigate and allow certain decisions at certain times. If my dog's in a crate with a toy, I'm really only allowing for certain outcomes to happen. The dog can play by themselves, right? Another big function of establishing authority, and one also that a lot of trainers, I would say most trainers really focus on a lot, is obedience building, right? Now, I do know that there's a little bit of you know, overlap or maybe people overvaluing like obedience commands, sit down, stay type thing. The reason I think that it helps you build authority, I'm not a huge believer that it in itself builds authority. Like teaching a dog to sit doesn't automatically make it patient and, you know, controlling its impulses. But what that does do, what obedience can do, is it allows you to create very simple criteria, very clear criteria. And you do that by teaching a dog to understand what it is that you're asking. And so you're kind of building language together, which builds a sense of connection. But in that connection, you're conveying very simple messages. Hey, do it like this, right? Or just don't do it like that. And then once you've established that, then you can start the process of whatever step two is, you know, like boundary setting for doing the thing and, you know, and so on and so on. But that, I think, is a big function of establishing authority, is routine building, obedience. There's, you know, playing. You can establish rules in the middle of a game, right? Like, don't nip me, nip the tug toy type thing. There's all kinds of little ways you can do that. But these are some of the big ones, I feel like.
Yeah. Another way I like to kind of approach the development of authority is I always teach people authority figures control three basic things. They control space, where the dog can be, or what the person, where the person can be. They control opportunities, and they control resources, right? And so when we develop routines, like you think of like the traditional puppy protocol, right? There's a puppy pen, there's a crate. You don't let the dog just run around the house like an idiot, right? And get into things and get, you know, chew on things and eat things. Like you have to manage the space and manage the dog's opportunities as much as possible. Well, there's this beautiful thing that happens when a learner has to kind of give in to criteria or are exposed to certain limits and boundaries, right? If you think of it, guys, as a kid, think of it like, you know, when you're a kid and you're told that you can't do something, like what emotions would come across your body? You'd get frustrated. You might get a little angry. You might get a little anxious. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't follow the rule, right? It doesn't mean I shouldn't go to bed on time, right? So by me getting upset when I was told to go to bed, and eventually learning to process that feeling and getting over it, I was actually working on managing my emotional states. I was also working on not arguing with my parents. I was also learning on understanding that's not really something to be upset about, right? And so when we have dogs go through certain routines and follow certain criteria consistently, we're actually helping them with their regulate their emotional states, right? When I teach my dog to be in a crate while I go into the other room, if I have a dog who really suffers from attachment, that's going to be a really important step in their puppy training, right? So teaching them, hey, I know you're stressed. I'll be right here in the other room. I'll come back and reassure you 3 to 4 times, but I need you to quiet down. I need you to calm down. And eventually that puppy learns to manage that emotion and manage that behavior. Make sense? And another one would be like if I ask a dog to hold a stay in obedience, right? Let's say that dog really wants that squirrel. And I tell that dog, sorry, bud, you can't have that squirrel right now. Well, my dog has to learn to process this idea of permission, this idea of delayed gratification, this idea of giving in and yielding to authority figures, right? And a lot of times what we see, most people who have severe behavioral problems with their dogs, their dog does not perceive them as authority. Now, we've heard stuff like this. Like, if you've ever watched any episode of Caesar Milan, or even if you just watch, like, in, like, social media right now, you hear terms like pack leader, you got to be the alpha, you got to be the authority, your dog doesn't look at you, think you're strong, or you're too weak, or you're too soft. And people say all these really, these things that don't really have full definitions. But just going back to that definition we started off with, you have the power and the right to give order. Like, it's your job to be in charge when you're the authority figure, right? And it shouldn't have to be in a mean kind of way, right? So this is going to be really, really important. Always remember this correlation. A lot of people with behavioral problems with their dog, their dogs do not see them as authority figures. And typically when we see dogs with aggression, we kind of see that, well, funny enough, they kind of have a lot of fear in them, and they don't feel safe, and they don't feel secure. And so in this next section, we want to talk about how being an authority figure helps with helping dogs feel safe and secure. Mariano?
Yeah, so we look at it very simply. Everybody remembers the hierarchy of needs, right? If not, take a quick Google search, the hierarchy of needs, and you'll see kind of this...
Yeah, Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Right, and you'll see this like pyramid of, you know, of order of importance, essentially, for living beings. And you'll see all the things that are important, obviously, like love and like acceptance and so on. But above all that, you'll see things like food and shelter and safety and security, because the order of these things would matter a lot, which I know that sounds obvious as we say it, but when you're talking about working with a dog, a lot of times people get confused by this. Like, everybody listening to this has had, you know, an owner, maybe this owner's even worked with another trainer, and they're like, he likes treats, I can work with him in the house, but if he sees a dog, I try to give him one and he doesn't want it and he doesn't care. And it's like, well, I mean, that makes sense. He's a living animal and he's not worried about how hungry he is, or he's not worried about the opportunity of attaining a tasty reward if he feels like he's about to fight for his life.
Right.
And so you have to take these things into account, and you have to try your best to look at things from the perspective of this dog, right? And obviously, you guys, I'm sure this goes without saying, but every dog is different, and there's, you know, all kinds of reasons that dogs may show signs of reactivity and aggression and so on. But just as a general understanding of building authority, we've all seen a dog that is a bit out of line because it doesn't view, you know, doesn't appreciate or respect the authority of the owner. So in those instances, part of it is establishing boundaries and a level of order, of course. The other part of it, to Brent's previous point, is the dog having to reckon with the fact that you're going to experience, it sounds weird to say, but sort of a loss. Like, I want the squirrel, I'm not going to get the squirrel. That is a hard pill to swallow when you really think about it. I'm not going to get this thing that I want because this other person said I can't have it. And the where the rubber meets the road in my mind there is, you know, trainers, you know, you could argue in functional obedience, like walking a dog that's reactive over squirrels, you can argue that the purpose of rewards that trainers use is to try to clarify to the dog, by listening to me, you don't have to go without. Like, listening to me isn't going to be counterintuitive to your well-being, because the dog won't get the squirrel, that's true. But what if I can offer you an opportunity to chase something else? That's where we talk a toy, that's where we talk a treat, that's where we, you know, even like praise and affection, right? You kind of smooth over in such a way that the order remains intact, and the dog's behavior remains intact, but the dog doesn't feel slighted by that, right? And in circumstances where that isn't the case, that's when you see a lot of people being like unnecessarily heavy-handed on dogs with corrections that are kind of nuts, or just like don't make sense. Like, I see the correction, but like, why did you give it right now? What was the objective? What was the dog supposed to understand here? And when you take these little pieces of nuance into it, that's when you can start to look at authority as the kind of thing that's like a two-player game. Like, I want to be authoritative. I want my dog to understand that I can set the pace and expectation. But I want my dog to be able and willing to accept what I'm asking, right? Like, I don't want to drag this dog kicking and screaming. And that's, in my mind at least, how you can kind of sum up the function of establishing authority and the different mechanisms therein, right? Have the dog understand, like, at the end of the day, I do need XYZ. I'm going to give you order, but I understand that you're feeling this sense of loss, this sense of missing out, and I'm going to try to make up for that as best I can so that we can both agree the authority is also in your best interest.
Yeah, definitely. There was my mentor used to give me a really simple metaphor to explain how authority helps in your confidence, right? And give me 2 seconds. My dog is chewing on this bone like crazy. Can you hear it in the microphone? Mm-hmm. The bone? 1 second. Okay, so the metaphor, it goes like this. He would say, okay, imagine you're walking down the street and it's a dark, dark night and you're walking down the street to your car and you hear some footsteps behind you. Well, when you're by yourself, you know, you have so many options, all the fear responses. I can fight, I can flight, I can freeze, I can appease. I have all the options available to me, but usually people feel threatened, they're going to run away. Imagine that same scenario, but you have a 3-year-old in your arms. You know, you're walking down the street with a 3-year-old, right? Because you are now charged to take care of this 3-year-old, you are actually more likely to become aggressive to whoever's following you. You're going to grab your keys. You're going to stick them in your hands. You're going to be prepared for the worst because you know you can outrun the 3-year-old. But it wouldn't be right because you're the authority figure over the 3-year-old. You're supposed to keep them safe. You're supposed to protect them, right? And so that power dynamic is you are now responsible for them, right? But now that same scenario, imagine that that 3-year-old is no longer a 3-year-old, right? And imagine that it's like your boyfriend or your husband or your best friend, and they're like a black belt in jiu-jitsu, right? How do you feel confidence-wise, right? So if you're walking down that street and you have a person next to you who you feel is better at taking charge or has more authority physically or status-wise or whatever it might be, you feel a lot safer because the power dynamics have shifted. Now that person, if anything's going to go wrong, is going to take care of it, not you. Right. So now, in essence, you become the 3-year-old and that person becomes the authority figure now. And so the way that authority plays in our brains when it comes to safety and security, we are always subconsciously looking at capabilities. We're also looking at psychologically, like who's the smartest, fastest, sharpest between the two of us, you know, and that's going to really, really play a factor in how confident you feel with who's next to you. And a lot of dogs, sadly, I believe that they feel that their job is to take care of the owner. They think the owner is the 3-year-old in this metaphor versus the owner treating the dog like, no, 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 I'm in charge. I'll take care of you. Everything's going to be all right. Right. And building that rapport with your dog, building that psychological relationship with our dogs, it starts from the time that they're young, and it also involves us being super consistent as they get older.
Okay. 100%.
Yeah, so I want to take a quick little commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to go ahead and talk about, for dog trainers, how we go about explaining or talking to softer owners, people who are scared to become authority figures and kind of what gets in the way. And we're also going to talk about for dog trainers, what gets in the way for certain dog trainers to be a little bit more authoritative with their clients so that they can help serve that client and that dog a lot better. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Dog Trainers Podcast. You know what's a great way to support this podcast? By becoming a sponsor today. With sponsoring the podcast, you'd be helping us make this show the best it can be, and so much more. From hosting more local events, traveling throughout the country, and connecting with trainers from around the world, ultimately getting you, the listener, more of the content that you love. For more information, please contact us at dogtrainerspodcast@gmail.com or visit our Instagram page at dogtrainerspodcast. Thank you guys, and now back to the show.
All right, guys, welcome back, and thanks again for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast. This is Season 3, Episode 6, Building Authentic Authority. So just before the break, we were talking about what building authority means for your dog and the level of safety and the level of comfort, or maybe the comfort of lack of responsibility of outcome that your dog would feel when they understand that you're the one who's responsible and you're the authority figure given in, you know, in this situation, right? Now, we wanted to shift gears a little bit and talk about some of the difficulties that we as dog trainers notice in certain dog owners. Okay. Now, we notice that sometimes dog owners are nervous about or fearful of or unwilling to hold their dogs accountable. And oftentimes, it stems from this place of them themselves having like this negative correlation in their mind between being authoritative and being like heavy-handed or unfair or mean or, you know, any of these things. And they don't want to be that person, right? Mm-hmm. And so they try their best to not be that person, including with their dogs. Now, there's an interesting like little caveat there. I'm sure all of us have met owners who are unwilling to hold their dogs accountable until the owner gets annoyed enough or mad enough or scared enough. And then at that time, now they're willing to, you know, give a correction to a dog or speak a little bit more firmly to the dog in order to make their point. And sometimes it works when they do that. And then you'll talk to this owner and then they just feel guilty about it. Like, I don't want to have to yell at him, or I don't want to have to put him away, or I don't want to have to whatever. But if I don't, he just doesn't stop type thing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a really interesting thing to break down, because I kind of look at it like this. An owner who shows that they have the capability of doing this thing, and they're not dumb. Like, even in the moment, if they're upset, they're still aware of what they're doing type thing. So this tells us what? They can do it. It tells us they know they can do it because they access that option once they get like upset enough. And there's this really fascinating thing, and this isn't like a character attack. I'm not saying this like it's a malicious thing, but it seems like once they get upset enough, in their mind, my level of upset justifies a certain response. It's like that whole thing with like desperate times, desperate measures type thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I can understand that. I mean, I feel like there's other places in the world where I can even agree with that, but it's a fascinating thing, because oftentimes as a trainer, what are you telling the owners? If you're quicker to hold them accountable, what don't you have to do? Mm-hmm. Be as hard on them as when you finally are like erupting on them, basically, right? Plus, if we talk about what makes, you know, like a really good example of an authoritative figure, a big piece of that is you're calm and collected. Right? Mm-hmm. You're still firm and clear and all those other things, of course, but you're calm about it. And so it's best, at least in my opinion, I'm sure, you know, Brent agrees, but it's mm-hmm. best to, you know, to offer accountability, you know, unemotionally, nice and clear, get the job done. Mm-hmm. Don't be over the top about it. Mm-hmm. And owners tend to get in their own way, and it becomes this self-perpetuating cycle. I don't want to be that person that's mean to my dog, so I don't say anything until I'm mad enough to be mean to my dog, and then I feel bad because I was mean to my dog, and then it just creates this mm-hmm. this whole thing.
Yeah, and it creates this fear of being authoritative, actually.
Right, and doing it again and again. And then now you have evidence, like, oh, but I did it last time. And so it's important to try your best to teach softer owners how to get ahead of that. And we kind of want to talk about maybe some tips or techniques on how we can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think going back to what we were talking about, how typically when we are enforcing a rule or kind of holding our ground with a limit or a boundary, we're going to be met already with an emotion by the dog. It could be frustration, you know, it could be anxiety. It could be all these different things. So as we know, dealing with each other, like humans, if I meet emotion with the exact same emotion, I just magnify that emotion, right? Like if someone's mad and I'm mad and I come at them mad with a mad tone, it's just going to be more mad, right? We're just going to get more mad. So the basic idea is especially as the authority figure, and you learn this in management and leadership and public speaking and in dealing with clients, like you learn this. Try to not meet emotion with emotion when it comes to if your goal is to try to guide, right, or teach. Keeping a level head is going to be so important, because you make clear decisions, you're able to be fair, you're able to stay level headed. And the funny thing is, when you're not actually emotionally frustrated or taxed, you can actually be more persistent and consistent. Because it's like, nope, I'm not going to do it. Nope, not going to do it. And you can be firmer, like as in more consistent and stable, when you're not actually getting emotional. And I see this all the time with dog clients, as Mariano said. They finally get so worked up, they do something what they consider to be harsh, and it works. But in their mind, they go, man, I had to be harsh to do it. Well, only because you let yourself get harsh, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, instead of going like, sit, goddamn it, sit. Well, get rid of the goddamn it sit and the five other sits before it and just say sit and then raise your cookie up, you know, or just say sit and guide your dog into a sit, right? It's really, really simple. And a lot of times people are not used to being that clear with humans. They're not that used to being clear with their kids. They're not that used to being that clear with their dogs. So this is literally sometimes a first time skill we are teaching people in dog training.
And a lot of it stems from giving people kind of the green light to like get things done.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if it sounds harsh to tell a client like, well, it's getting there because you're letting it get there. Obviously these are conversations that you have to have with nuance. These are conversations that you have to have, you know, with an understanding that you're on the owner's side. Like, don't preach at the owner, you know, and don't let them feel like you're just kind of attacking them from on high as this perfect dog handler. Mm-hmm. It's just, at the same time, how many dog trainers out there see the problem and don't have the words to say it? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to be like, it's getting to that point because you're letting it get to that point,
mm-hmm.
right? And then once the owner, you know, gives you their attention, like, well, what do you mean? Like, how? You know, what do I do? Then you give them very clear instruction, right? Why don't you ask for the sit, lure with the treat, and if the dog isn't sitting down, help them with the lead. Like, make it happen,
yeah.
right? It can be a simple, like, you know, tip and a simple little change for them to get what they're looking for.
Yeah.
But sometimes they understand that. Like, you know, it's not like it's a super foreign, you know, thought to a client to be like, oh, pull on my leash. Like, they get it a lot of the time. It's just sometimes they don't think that that's an okay thing to do.
Yeah. Well, and that goes back to this idea of, you know, remember all those buzzwords people would say, like dominance and alpha and all this stuff. Those are cool words and all, but like if I was a client and someone was like, okay, I met a dog trainer and they said I need to be more of a pack leader. The fuck does that mean? like what does a pack leader do? Or like what does an alpha do? Or what does so really an authority figure actually needs to know what to do. Like, how do I remedy this situation? So give me the solution, give me the process. And then once you teach me how to lead the team, once you teach me how to run the drills, once you teach me those things, then the only thing getting in the way at that point is the conviction of the owner, right? But once you are competent and you know, this will stop that, this will make this happen, this will do that happen. And now you have the ability to enforce those limitations and those understandings that we talked about earlier in the episode. I think competency is a really important part for
it. Might be the most important part.
Yeah.
Right? And it also like for an owner that has an emotionally hard time being firmer with their dog.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
It like specifically for that type of owner, when you can express to them that competency is the big deal here, then they often will get over this fear of like, oh, I'm not going to be this like mindless brute. And it's like, no, mm-hmm. I want you to be thinking and calculating. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying go insane. I'm mm-hmm. saying just hold the dog accountable.
Yep.
Then that helps them feel like you're kind of playing in their universe now. And they're like, oh, well, I can do that. Right. Yeah. So yeah, it's important. Sometimes the owners think, you know, being authoritative means this whole other thing. And then you show them like, actually it's more like this thing that you already know how to do. I see that you're, you know, a mom or a dad. I see that you're, you know, a boss at work. I see, like, I know that you're capable of holding people accountable, and I know that you're capable of doing it in a way that you deem reasonable and fair. You already do it. Just do it here too. And here's how. Then a lot of the softer-minded owners are like, oh, okay, yeah, I thought I had to, like, alpha roll the dog or something.
People don't, right.
You know, because you hear weird stuff online, right?
Yeah,
and like, they don't know. That's why they're not dog trainers. So you have to be understanding of the fact that they may have this, like, really insane idea. That's not their fault.
That's, I mean, true.
So your job is to just express to them like, do it like this, and that's it. Now you're being authoritative. Congrats, right?
Yeah.
100%. And then oftentimes they pick it up and they run with it.
Yep. Just stepping up to the plate and holding your ground is enough to be an authority figure. Not
exactly.
Not bonking the dog. Not alpha rolling the dog. Not doing any of those things. Those don't equate. Those are other things. Second type of soft owner I want to talk about. I hope we don't get in trouble for saying soft owners, but we know what we're talking about.
You guys know what we mean.
You know what we mean, I think, as dog trainers.
Yeah. In fact, sorry, just since you bring it up, just 1 minute. When we say soft owners, or we talk about they say that they're willing to do it once they're upset and everything else. Mm-hmm. I think the reason people listening to this won't get upset is the same reason that dog trainers, when they're working with these owners, need to be willing to say things in a loving way, is because you know that we're saying it with your benefit in mind.
Yep.
Right. That's what tough love is, right? That's what healthy criticism is. And it's not for nothing. We want you to take this for what it's worth and take the lessons that are going to help you and help yourself, right? Yep. So because people know we mean it in the I want to help you type of way, people are going to be fine.
Oh, for sure. Cool. So the next type of soft owner, there is a client that I run into regularly that is so scared of disciplining the dog. They refuse to because they are so worried of either feeling guilty or they have so much fear of creating tension in the relationship, right? And this is a little bit of a paradox. They're so worried that they're going to create tension in the relationship if they set boundaries and rules, right? That they actually create physical limitations and boundaries on the dog. So these are the dogs that, because they don't listen or respect their owner, these dogs are now forced to stay inside, forced to be in their crate, never go outside on a walk because they're lunging and barking at everything. They're only staying in the dog. So pretty much this dog's quality of life gets lesser and lesser and lesser because the person feels so bad that maybe psychologically they might create tension in the relationship, right? And so this is an interesting case study because, one thing I like to tell my clients is, I said, you can't hate the problem, but also hate the solution just as much, right? There's a psychological term for it. Is it a dissonance or something where you hate two opposing, or you believe two opposing ideas at the same time?
Yeah, it's a cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, cognitive dissonance. And this is a situation here where actually someone really needs their hand held and they need to be shown the light. They need to be shown the solution because if left to their own devices and conviction, they won't do it themselves.
Yeah. Right? And just really quick, there's one more example of that I know a lot of people have run into. There's the owner who feels bad about applying structure, rules, authority to their dog.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, maybe another form of cognitive dissonance, they just kind of expect the dog to know how to navigate with lack of rules. Mm. And here's a real world example. So years ago, I used to work at a hotel called Harris Ranch in Central California. And I'll never forget this. Right around Christmas time, which is when it's popping, just the whole 5 freeway, people driving up and down to visit family for Christmas and all that. Somebody stopped at the gas station on the property, opened their trunk to their SUV, and their dachshund, no training to speak of whatsoever. I don't know these people, never trained with them. They're just people, they're travelers. They let their dachshund out to go pee. No leash, no nothing. Dog bolts and is gone. And we're talking, for those of you who don't know, in Central Cal is huge agriculture land. So this dog is mega gone in fields with coyotes and, and stuff. And so the mom freaks out and everybody's like, you poor thing, I hope you find your dog. And I was like, why did you do that? And of course I was the bad guy, but I was like, does your dog know how to stay next to you off leash? Does your dog know this and that? Mm-hmm. Why'd you let her go? Right. Mm-hmm. And and if you guys feel like I'm an asshole for it, her husband came down 2-3 days later and I caught that little fucking dog. Sorry for that. It's a dachshund. And I ran that shit down and I caught it and I got it home. True story. I promise.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. That's so awesome. So in any case, my point being, we've all met the owner that's I let him outside and he chased after this bird. And I was like, no, Maggie, come back. And she didn't. And it's like, well, you have to hold them accountable. So they're the soft owners
them.
Who teach them. Right. So they're the soft owners who just limit things, which might be the better of those two options. Mm-hmm. Or they just kind of don't. But then when the dog, when push comes to shove and the dog's never done this thing, they fail.
Yeah. Well, and I see those people who kind of just blindly assume the dog's going to know something. They actually traumatize themselves when the dog doesn't do it, right? The dog bolts down the street and then they're traumatized now. They never want to go outside or they never want to leave their front door open. And they'll do that for years. They won't open the front door for years, or they won't, you know, they won't walk in front of their property for years until they call the trainer, right? And you find stuff right. out about this. It's so funny. But yeah, going back to what you were saying, like part of being the authority is just taking, or what we said earlier at the top of the show, you have to take the time to teach and understandings, right? You have to take the time to do it. So like there's kind of this process I feel as a dog parent. At first you're the teacher, then you're the coach, then you're the parent, right? So teachers have to take their time to make sure our dogs comprehend things. The coaches make those comprehensions stronger and put in the real world and make them happen in real time. And then the parent's job is really just to reinforce, enforce. And that's the authority figure, right? Everything else is a form of teaching. Cool. So now, next we're going to go into trainers. So if you're a dog trainer listening to this, we're going to talk about, it's really normal, you know, especially earlier in your career, how to, that sometimes we may not be as authoritative with our clients, right? Our clients might look to us more as a service provider. Like they tell us what to do. They boss us around. They tell us we're going to come and work with their dog 3 times a day. Like they pretty much, we cater so much to them when we're younger trainers. And sometimes it's great for experience, and sometimes it's not advantageous for actually training the dog. So what we're going to talk about next is we're going to talk about, for softer trainers, people who are scared of creating conflict. We actually see that the things that people are scared of creating with their dogs, certain trainers are actually scared of creating this with their clients. I'm mm-hmm. scared of judgment. I'm scared of conflict. I'm scared of people not liking me. I'm scared of all these things, which are the exact same fears the owners sometimes have with their dogs. So let's get started.
Yeah, 100%. And it often comes in the form of like over appeasement, right? Mm-hmm. The trainer agrees with the client, even if the trainer knows that the agreement here may be to the detriment of the dog. Mm-hmm. A simple real world example, you know, I don't know, my dog's pulling on leash, and I go, look, when he's pulling, a little pop on the leash, hand the leash over to the owner, dog immediately starts pulling, owner gives a little pop on the leash that's like ineffective, too soft, too late, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And the owner's just like, or the trainer's just like, yep, that's it, now do it again, you know, and they just continue to practice incorrectly over and over. And the trainer sees the mistake, but they're just like, yep, do it again, do it again. And of course, there's something to be said for practice, and there's something to be said for letting them figure out. Like, I get all that. But at a certain point, you have to be like, no, that was incorrect. Mm-hmm. Just for the sake of their benefit, right? Honestly, ethically, just so that they can get what they paid for out of your time, too. So the yes man trainer, that's definitely a big one that we see often, especially in newer trainers. Like Brent said, it's kind of tough in the beginning for a bunch of reasons. You know, typically a newer trainer is what, younger and is a little less comfortable, like kind of holding someone accountable. Mm-hmm. Typically a newer dog trainer is newer to business period and just doesn't quite have a client base and doesn't really want to lose a client, so they don't risk like offending them, I guess you could say, right? Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, if you know better and you don't say it, the dog's not going to get better, mm-hmm. right? And it is what it is, right? So that's something that you really have to be mindful of. And we've done an episode in the past. I'll remind myself what it is, and I'll put it in the description of this, you know, talking about how to have tougher conversations with people, mm-hmm. right? You don't just like throw yourself in there, you know, half-assed with it, but you have to be willing to tell an owner, excuse me, like, nope, that was wrong. Let's do it again. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And another type of soft trainer, we call them the pushover trainer. Right. Now, if that sounds mean, hear me out. The trainer who's giving needed advice that the owner is disregarding, right? The owner is unwilling to put a little bit of pressure on the dog. We've all met this person, right? Like, no, I get it. I just don't want to do that type thing, right? And it's a tough one because I get it. Like, you know, the owner feels how they feel, and obviously the person's like opinions and all this stuff is valid. Like, I get all that. Don't get me wrong. But what it can do is it can get you into a bit of a sticky situation, because the longer you wait, it's like setting relationship boundaries. The longer you wait, the more it feels out of the blue and like caught off guard and kind of unfair and like, well, where was this before, right? Mm-hmm. So it's good to start as early as is prudent, obviously, to to be realistic with what the owner's going to have to do with the dog in order to elicit change. And if the owner is resistant to it, then you're going to have to get comfortable like holding your ground on it a little bit.
Yeah. I think you had a little bit of a Freudian slip. You said the owner is unwilling to put pressure, but I think it was supposed to be the trainer is unwilling to put pressure on the owner. There was a little Freudian.
Yeah, sorry. I read it and I thought I made a mistake when I typed it. Because ultimately the owner is the one who's unwilling, right? Well, the trainer just needs to step on it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And to elaborate on this, so it's like, so these are trainers that they're not yes men, but they give good advice. But every now and then we run into that client that's a little stubborn or pushy or authoritative. And actually, these are some of the hardest clients for service providers to deal with, mind you. They're demanding, they're pushy. And funny enough, the only way that you can actually be successful with clients like this is by learning how to hold your ground, right? And if we go back to the very, very top of the show where we talked about the process of developing authority, you have to create understanding and objectives and enforce those objectives, right? Like, and enforce those things, right? And it's so interesting because for dog trainers, if we go in with a game plan, and we can't communicate that game plan, and then just hold our clients accountable to that game plan, we are naturally the authority figure. Now, sometimes the quality of your game plan might need work, right? Like my game plans that I have now are way more advanced. And actually, they're not advanced in a complicated way. They're more simple now than they were when I was a young trainer, right? But I held them accountable regardless. Right. Even if I had a complicated system back when I started, I held people accountable, and the people who stuck with me, they loved me, and we got the results, and we got it done, and they referred clients to me. And that's the big key. Literally the same thing we're telling clients to do with their dogs, we are telling trainers to do with their clients. Mm-hmm. Right.
And can I just say really quick, to your point, like the people who stuck with you, it worked. For the people that don't stick with you, for trainers that have been working long enough to meet owners who come from other training programs, I'm sure you felt what it feels like to get bitten in the ass by a pushover trainer. And it kind of works like this. Oh, yeah, this dog's, you know, I don't know, pulling or jumping or whatever. Let's go ahead and try this. And the owner goes, no, I don't, I'm not really comfortable with that, you know, and then you guys have your conversation about like why I really think you should try this. And then they go, well, my other trainer said this. And now you're bitten in the ass because now the owner has like an expectation because other trainers have told me otherwise type thing, right?
So why aren't you working with those other trainers?
True, exactly.
Because they didn't get you where you needed to be.
Right, exactly. And that's obviously an avenue you can take, right? I'm just making the point though that even if the trainer that they're working with now, like if they come to you and you still have the skill to like help them understand, like I get what you're saying, but your problem is still here, right? Yeah. So even though you can work around this a lot of the time, I'm just trying to make the point that if you're a bit of a pushover of a trainer, not willing to put pressure on a client when you know they need it, right? Not only is this dog not going to get better, but even if this client like leaves you and is no longer your problem, and trust me, as a young trainer, we've all felt the relief of that, it only hinders them further moving forward because now they have like evidence that they point to, like it's a courtroom. Like, well, this trainer said this, and so did that trainer, and so did that trainer. You're actually the only one who says that I really need to do this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you're comfortable holding your ground, you're like, true, but that's why you're here. And that's why I get the reputation that I have. Right. And, you know, and so on. I'm just making the point though, like be weary of long-term implications of being a pushover trainer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Cool. I think that's pretty much what we were talking about. That we're done. I think that was everything we wanted to talk about in this episode. Again, developing authentic authority is the name of this episode. I hope this was helpful. A couple things that we recapped. We talked about what authority is. We talked about the process of developing authority. We talked about certain things that that dog owners can do to help develop authority in their relationship with their dog. And we also talked about dog trainers who might come across more difficult clients or more soft clients and how certain tips that can help them develop the authority necessary to be able to be more effective as dog training service providers. All right. We really appreciate you guys. We love you guys. If you guys have any questions on this episode, feel free to email us at dogtrainerspodcast@gmail.com. You guys can also DM us at the Dog Trainers Podcast. And check us out. If you guys like this episode or you have certain clients that you think might like this episode, go ahead and send them a copy of it. It's only 45 minutes long. It should be a really easy, fast listen.
And for us, that's a feat.
Yeah, I know. Normally our episodes are 2 hours long. But thank you guys again for listening. We will see you guys in our next episode. My name is Brent Labrada. That guy's Mariano Alvarez. And we will see you guys on the next one. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast, a podcast created by dog trainers, for dog trainers, or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
We really hope that you enjoyed this episode and can't wait to be back with you guys. Be sure to follow us at Dog Trainers Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to punch the hell out of that subscribe button and leave us a review.
Remember, guys, this is your podcast. You're the best listeners in the world, and we'll see you next time.